It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests. Bow your heads as the Lord's mentioned.
Welcome to Bauer and Pollock. It is John Pollock, joined as always by Court Bauer. Court, it is a revolutionary week in Bauer and Pollock history.
It is.
We have migrated to Google Docs.
Yeah, not the listeners, but for us from organizing this, yes.
No, you and I should just actually release transcripts every week via people's Google Drives, and then they can read our show. That's the next evolution of podcasts, is transcribing a podcast. Just skip the audio, get people reading again.
Yeah, well, we, after many years, have discovered...
Had the worst planning for our shows.
We basically randomly just send each other a list of topics, almost simultaneously, never the same topics, which is good, but it was kind of a cluster.
We have realized you and I are completely different when it comes to our thought process of what would be topics for today's show. And they would literally it would happen not every week, but enough times that it was spooky that it would be within 3 minutes of each other that we would send our lists throughout the day before or something like
it's
that.
It's wrestling's equivalent to Stranger Things, just a lot nerdier. But we finally discovered these wonderful things called Google Docs. Now, we knew what they were. We just never occurred to us to actually use them for this. So now we actually can streamline our thoughts. It doesn't matter to you, but for us, it's a great epiphany. And so with that being said, it's a crazy week in wrestling. We have our Google Doc fired up here. What's the top story here?
Well, on your list, it's Ric Flair and Waka Flocka Flame announcing their presidential campaign.
Well, they are as credible here in the States as Trump and Hillary, so why not?
Oh, my gosh. We're going to get into all the major stories, but, Court, what is going on? Are you just counting down the days? I'm in Canada, and I can't wait till this damn thing's over.
Let me just put it this way. SNL cannot top what I saw in terms of the highlights from last night's gala event in New York.
Oh, boy.
The SNL just can't parody these. They can't out-parody the actual subjects in this case, this year for this campaign. And that's really sad. But that's the United States. And a lot of people are asking me, like, oh, how's the weather in Canada during the winter? Is it really that bad? I'm like,
no, it's not, actually.
I think it's reasonable compared to what we're facing, no matter who wins in a few weeks here down in the United States. These are some hard times, as Dusty would say.
It's currently 52 in Toronto, but it is raining like a mofo here. It's been raining all day Thursday, all day Friday. It's going to be gross. Actually, it's supposed to let up tonight, so that's some good news for my Torontonians. But my goodness, that dinner on Thursday night where these two had to go up and do comedy was just something else. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump, the man who proclaimed that Saturday Night Live needs to call it a day, just not funny anymore. Watching this guy so painfully deliver his lines, I mean, this is about the only bombing that I think Americans are comfortable with this guy handling, because he sure performed it on Thursday night. He was awful. And for everything you can say about Donald Trump, he's at least a very good performer. That's the reason he has gotten, I think, to this level, is because he's got a delivery, and it was devoid on Thursday.
I think we have a situation here where you have two very unlikable candidates, and when you see them in this setting, it's just it was cringe inducing, both of them. I was just like, oh, this is unsettling. And there's more of that to come. We got 18 days here in the States, so yay.
I'm now flying into the States during the day of the election, so I will be arriving just in time for the new president to be announced.
I just imagine the Fight Network news copter landing and you jumping out with a microphone running somewhere.
Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be exciting. I've never been in the States before for election night.
Oh,
I'm actually very excited about this.
It's a joyous occasion this year.
I'm going to go to Times Square, and I'm just going to pull up a chair and just take it all in.
It's going to be you, some guy dressed as the Cookie Monster, and just random tourists. But it's not like, yeah, New Year's. It's nothing like that in Times Square when it comes to the president. But you'll have a big screen probably.
I'm expecting the opposite. I mean, if New Year's Eve is the party, this is going to be the funeral, it seems like.
It's going to be interesting. Not in a good way, but...
You don't have to say who, but have you decided who you're voting for?
I've decided I'm probably not going to vote this election because I...
Oh, come on. You got to vote.
Everyone says that to me, and it's like, I can't. I just really can't. I'm appalled by it, and I feel horrible squandering that opportunity, but it's just like, I really just don't feel right about voting for either of these people. And, you know, I'm in a state where, you know, the Democrat has won since 1984. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not going to vote for Trump, but I'm not going to – my vote doesn't matter in New York regardless. It really – my vote doesn't matter.
Every vote matters.
Not this time. I have no – I don't want to pick either. It's like, pick your poison. I prefer to pass. I really just – no matter what, I will guarantee this. Look at this podcast in 4 years. Remember this. On October 21st, 2016, I predicted that whoever wins this 2016 race is not getting reelected.
That's probably a safe assumption.
Yeah.
Probably is. I do think that I'm curious, you know, obviously this is a very simplified view of things, but if you are the Republican Party, I mean, are you not expecting a massacre come the election?
I think
like this is going to be a massacre.
I think what you're going to have here is something like a very low turnout. But when the votes come in, it'll probably be a very high concentration on one side, and that will be probably Hillary's side. But I don't know anything about this shit. You're asking the wrong guy.
I just feel that the longer they attach themselves to this candidate, they are only hurting themselves 4 years from now. To me, the game is the midterms, first of all, and then the next cycle, and having that Republican ready. Because if they had some incredible Republican candidate this year that was ready, shoo-in to win.
Yeah, but they hot-shotted their guy they were grooming, I think, Marco Rubio. I think they hot-shotted him. He wasn't ready. It's like booking. You know, you got to wait. You got to groom him. Got to be ready. And he wasn't ready for prime time. I don't think their other candidates really were, probably.
Like, is Rudy Giuliani, is his political career just toxic?
It's weird.
After this,
weird,
he has been thrown out there as the lamb to slaughter every single week. He is the puppet thrown out there to just be, I mean, the look back on Rudy Giuliani during this period is going to me, unfortunately, define his political legacy.
Rudy, it's weird because the Rudy I remembered here in New York when he was, you know, America's mayor, I guess was the term they used. He was fantastic. He was a really awesome mayor. New York City had never enjoyed such great times. He was a great leader during some turbulent times with 9/11. He was just really good. Crime was way down. He dealt with a lot of issues. He did a lot of things before becoming mayor, you know, stopping a lot of big issues with the mob and taking them on head to head. I mean, very ballsy stuff, very ambitious, very successful guy. And then something happened where he tried to transition to the national stage, try to become president, and he wasn't the same guy then. And then now I look at him, it's almost like I don't know what's happened. This guy from the guy 10 years ago, 15 years ago, is a totally different guy, but people don't want to hear politics, John. They want to hear wrestling, and there's plenty of politics in wrestling, plenty of turmoil with wrestling, even connecting to your own offices up in Toronto at the Fight Network. What the hell is going on with TNA, Fight Network, Billy Corgan, the Smashing Pumpkins, the Harris Brothers? It's 6 degrees of madness with TNA.
Yes, let us talk about the state of TNA because, yes, this is very much connected to Anthem Sports and Entertainment, which is the parent company of the Fight Network, who put out a statement this week confirming that they had funded the most recent tapings, which were Bound for Glory and the subsequent tapings coming out of that. And I want to get the right quote here about essentially that they have – Fight Network has also offered to provide TNA Impact Wrestling with funding to repay the loans made by Mr. Billy Corgan and is positioned to provide additional transitional assistance to the company. So read from this. And first of all, like, I understand this is a very a position that's I don't want to be in. I don't like the fact that it's my company that's right in the middle of this. But my role is as doing news and reporting. So I am not involved in this end of things of my parent company that is levels above me. But looking at this court, I mean, this to me, what this reads to me is a move to try and get Billy Corgan out of the picture, which Billy Corgan is very popular amongst the talent. From what I hear, I mean, they were all rooting for Billy Corgan in this. Have you heard any different?
A lot of the talent have gravitated towards him. He seems to have a charisma and enthusiasm that it's been well received. You're going after several regime changes. You go and look back at the times of all the guys they've had go through there, and they feel like, well, Billy doesn't just have some unique perspective as a lifelong fan of wrestling, but also having worked in entertainment.
He represents change.
He represents change, but also potential stability if he can broker a deal to acquire the company. Now, that's seemingly becoming more difficult and problematic because of how the company is so entangled with all these debts, all these outstanding issues with loans and who's funding what and what they're getting exchanged. This is becoming so chaotically confusing. And hard to untangle. I don't know if there's a way for him to resolve this and become the owner. It's not a clean transaction, and most people in that position would run from this because it's just going to take a lot of time, and there's no guarantees you're going to have network support in 6 to 12 months. You don't know what you have down the road. It's a very unstable place, but he did or does represent stability, and he is the only guy that's really in the trenches with them trying to say, I'm trying to make this work. You know, you don't have really any of the other parties that are looking to maybe buy the company or acquire a piece of it. They're in the trenches. So he is a face that's the most familiar face for the boys, and I don't know what the future holds for this company. I don't think anyone can predict at this point.
So when you look at the structure of this, I mean, my question is, what is different now than what we've seen for the last number of years, where the post-Spike era, where they have this deal on Pop TV, that's their domestic outlet. They still have their international deals in India, in the UK, and I am not 100% sure, but I have heard there might be a third international deal. But at minimum, there's two international deals that they have that do pay them good money. So the question is, what if you are looking to turn this around, what is the step towards doing that? What is going to be different other than more capital has been raised to keep this going? What is the plan? Because to me, Court, touring is not a viable one. Pay-per-view has been proven to not be a viable one for them. So where is this revenue going to come out of outside of a domestic TV deal that pays you that all of a sudden falls into your lap, which how many doors must they have knocked on over the past number of years from the transition from Spike to Destination America to Pop?
And having spoken with a lot of those other networks about other projects myself, you know, your background comes up, pro wrestling, and having worked in some capacity with TNA, their reaction to TNA, their reaction isn't good. It's not good. And so it's like these aren't bridges that you can repair and go back to. And reputations spread like wildfire in entertainment, just like any line of work. And their reputation in the TV world is not a good reputation. And so you have to repair that. And I think Billy Corgan's idea of rebranding the company, renaming it, giving it a whole new identity is essential. But you also got to change the culture. And that really means gutting virtually everything. I'd shut down the Nashville office. I'd want to bring in my own people. And you're going to have to make some tough calls. They have a great roster. They really do. The roster's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the roster is the hope in all this. It's the hope in this. But you're going to need a real skilled creative team or a booker. And you're going to need new production, which Billy's got so many – he's got access to that stuff. And I think Billy making that comment of $40 million is probably just about right, not just to – get on solid ground, but to relaunch something and do it in a way that, you know, you're good for a few years and you have stability. Because honestly, you probably need more than $40 million if you want to be a real viable, albeit much smaller, number two. You really need to have that equity that cap to make those adjustments, to do marketing plans. They've never really done extensive marketing on the national level with media buys. They've never done real big time publicity. They did it with Spike's help when they did the live Monday night thing, but they never have done a sustained strategy. They have a lot they'd have to do, and none of it comes cheap. And there's so much to do. You're really just blowing this thing up and keeping the roster and the deals. But it's a complete reset.
You cited culture. I think that's a good word to describe that needs to change. And it's just the overall presentation of Impact. And when these free agents come around, I don't understand the need to go out and get the latest free agent where I don't think there's anyone, Court, that's going to come in and is just going to magically turn this around. There has been every star in the world that has gone through this place. And to just focus on talent, as you said, the talent to me is not the issue. It's the presentation of the talent. It is getting the most out of what you have. And we've seen a lot of talent that have just gone there and they've not been able to capitalize and be effective. I mean, Matt Hardy is one of the freshest things they've come up with in years, where they took a guy that was a star before TNA and have now branded him as something that is a TNA creation. And they should be applauded for that. But to me, those are more of the things of being creative with the talent you have rather than just spending more and more on outside talent. Because if anything, you would think the costs need to go down, not up.
You have to take calculated risks. You do need some star power, but I don't think you do it as stage one of the rebuilding process. You have to just do a complete reset and everything about that, including are you using a four-sided ring, a six-sided ring? What's the name of the company? What's the announced team looking like? I would personally blow up the announced team. How the show is shot. I mean, there's a lot of things they'd have to go holistically into this and look at every piece of how everything is connected and diagnose if it's healthy, if it's right for what the brand is moving forward, for the identity of the company, and then take it step by step. It's a long, thorough, thought-out process that needs to that's a big undertaking for whoever is in charge of this. I still think this thing might end up in bankruptcy. Can't say, don't know how it's going to play out, but and there's various forms of bankruptcy too. So
they've been given breathing room.
They've kicked out a million times. Like I said, the analogy of the TNA being a zombie, you can chop off its arm, it's going to keep coming at you. Chop off the legs, it's going to crawl at you. It is wrestling's zombie. So I don't know when this thing dies or if it does die. That's been their amazing trait as a company, is their survival, their ability to survive. And so we will perhaps we'll have an idea of where this company's headed, at least into the early part of next year, soon. But they've obviously booked tapings. They have funding through January. So will they be around by March? No one knows.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth to note here that this was only classified as a loan. So from my understanding, the Fight Network, they had a small percentage of the company, I believe 2.5%, and that was going back to earlier this year when they had that percentage. So I don't think that has changed or that they're going to be in any kind of decision-making power other than it's just funding at this point with the same regime in place that has been in place.
Well, if Fight Network somehow does take over TNA in the unlikely chance of that, I would like to see you either as the commissioner, just for the puns, and or doing their music as DJ Jopo. That's just my – I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, and you are the first person to make that joke this week.
Oh.
So congratulations, nice. Court.
Very good.
We are going to move on. Besides Ric Flair and Waka Flocka Flame, AJ Styles posted a picture that everyone is going insane about, and that is a photo with Shawn Michaels teasing a match for the Royal Rumble. Do you read anything more than getting the temperature of folks out there for this match? And something very un-WWE-like, teasing something that you don't have any plans to deliver on.
Well, I think AJ is probably bored. He just came off the road. He's sitting there at home on the couch. He fires up Photoshop and says, man, I'm just going to pass some time making some sweet graphics and then share them with the world. What could go wrong? Now, this is a WWE thing. They're teasing something that's going down. And there have been rumblings that HBK was considering.
Royal rumblings.
Royal rumbling. You know what? They've been pursuing HBK. It hasn't been that he's been considering. WWE's been pursuing Shawn Michaels for some time to do more. And Shawn now, his workload in 2016 has multiplied. He's doing a movie. He's doing the WWE Performance Center gig as the head coach, head trainer, whatever the title
is. And that to me is the most interesting thing. When I heard that he had uprooted his family and gone to Florida.
I love San Antonio. Love Texas.
Love San Antonio. Love just being off the grid. The fact he was putting himself in that environment every day, that to me said, well, if there's ever going to be a time that he changes his mind, it's going to be being around these guys all day, being immersed with pro wrestling once again, because this guy was obsessed with this industry, and that's why he needed, I think, to just completely take it out of his system, to get away from it. So being in that performance center, this would not stun me that he is eyeing another match, just being around it and having that interest and that desire to do it again. And if there's going to be a day and a place, it is the Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome.
Well, he's 51. I thought he was actually in his late 40s, but he's 51. And they're going to need a big story for the Alamo Dome to sell that thing out. They're going to need a top big fight, big time match. And Shawn Michaels' comeback, you know, historically Shawn Michaels hasn't been a big box office draw. He's been a big contributor, big player for WWE, but not historically a box office draw for the company. This will be interesting. I think they can tell the right story and get that place packed and hyped, because that is a big match, a first time ever, only time ever, maybe fight. And now we know why they aren't doing that Bill Goldberg, Brock Lesnar match at the Rumble, because they don't need it. They probably don't need it, because the Rumble itself will sell a lot of tickets. It's a big attraction, seemingly getting bigger each and every year, despite the booking being a little wonky some years. And then you have this as the other attraction, and I would assume. Yeah, we don't know it now, but maybe the title will be on the line. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But that's also a nice little something-something for SmackDown. If Shawn Michaels comes on and he's on the SmackDown side of things for this build, that gives them a nice little boost. And that, I think they need it. They really need it. And, you know, who's to say that Shawn Michaels won't be back doing something at WrestleMania? But these are all Band-Aids, Bill Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, HBK. They're great Band-Aids, but I can't remember. Imagine this in 1988 or 1995, whenever you start watching wrestling and all you're getting is Band-Aids. It's kind of concerning in the big picture. But another guy I'm wondering about for WrestleMania is Undertaker, who's recovering from hip surgery. What's your take on everything going on with Taker and his future in wrestling?
Well, I would say, with hip surgery, I mean, you looked at the match with Shane McMahon, and I think everyone's going to remember the spot at the end, but that was a pretty dreadful match up until the stunt at the end with Shane.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to – I mean, Shane McMahon is – I mean, they put them in a situation where – and we're going to see this in a couple of weeks. Like, the Hell in a Cell, it can be very limiting when you are just limited to – just having a match, and they put those guys out there for 25 minutes where you essentially had been promised something big happening, and I think it took the crowd out of it. They were not having a great match to begin with. I was not a big fan of the match going in, but it did get a big response from a lot of people. So that said, with Taker and hip surgery, I don't know how much more you're looking at. I mean, this is someone that has been looking at retirement since the 90s. Jesus, the power just went out in my room.
Got to pay those TNA bills.
I'm in the dark here. But nonetheless, if you can get another match out of him, great. But I'm just questioning, what are you really getting out of him at this point? Is The Undertaker at WrestleMania still what it meant a number of years ago? To me, without the streak, it certainly is missing something.
Yeah, I mean, Undertaker can wrestle a traditional Undertaker match and without doing all that crazy shit. If you look at the original version of The Undertaker, it was chops to the throat. It was using a boot. It was the tombstone. He would walk the rope, sure, but you take that one spot out and you do a classic Undertaker match, he can do that for as long as he wants. Now, the five-star classics that he started to put on display over the last decade or so in these great work clinics, yeah, I think it's probably behind us. I haven't been as impressed as others the last few years with his matches, but he's still, it's amazing for his size, his age, what he's been able to do. Will he be able to wrestle at WrestleMania? It all depends. Roddy Piper had a fake hip and wrestled for years. It's just how you have to work around an injury like that. And if he has a desire, there have been a lot of rumblings, not royal rumblings, but after WrestleMania this past year, that he was done. Will that be the case? We'll have to wait and see. But another guy I'm wondering about is Hideo Itami. He's injured again.
Yep, he is out for 2 months with a neck injury that you may have seen the power slam spot with Riddick Moss on a NXT live event. This guy, if he had, I mean, the bad luck is just such an understatement when it comes to this WWE run for Hideo Itami. Like, between all the setbacks with the shoulder and being out for as long as he was.
Like Mystico, I mean, in a lot of ways, the original Mystico to me. It's like Mystico had other issues too. But this, it's like snake bitten. It's just a snake
bit. It feels a lifetime ago. They did that special on him when he was in the Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania last year. Like, that feels like two lifetimes ago for this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, it's not a considerable amount of time. But again, it's just, it's hitting the brakes on him yet again as he was somewhat involved in this program with Austin Aries that I was hoping was going to get him back on track. And he's not getting any younger. He's been in that system a while. You can certainly look at the fact that, okay, we have this star who is on a house show in Largo, Florida with Riddick Moss. It's just, I mean,
yeah, I know.
What do you do when you come back? I don't even say that he's one of those guys that is instantly ready to go up to the main roster. It just feels that he hasn't been able to get any of that momentum going. I think it really peaked that WrestleMania weekend because I remember being at that San Jose NXT show. And when he finally hit that GTS and that place, they lost it. And with all those GTS teases, when he finally hit it, man, did that place go insane.
It went bananas. And it was, I mean, you're right. That felt like the big moment. And honestly, I would have given him the call that weekend to go to the main roster. I mean, he still had promo issues, I think, and how you're going to be able to do that. There's ways, but that's when a manager really comes in handy too. Someone that could talk him up, maybe a legend who from the Attitude Era who are great on promos or something like that. But yeah, it's also a cautionary tale for Shinsuke Nakamura because this guy isn't getting younger either. He's in his prime years and he's ready, more than ready. And he's given he's taught a lot of the guys down there at NXT. He's been a great help and influence to the younger guys. Now it's time to put him up on the main roster. The more you have an opportunity to work with that guy in the main roster, you don't need as many Band-Aids. But you don't know that until you put him out there on the main roster. And they desperately, desperately need to because, number one, a lot of the guys on the main roster aren't moving merch like they used to. Shinsuke Nakamura merch really does move. Same for Samoa Joe, another guy that, hey, he's no spring chicken either. Get him up. I know it's a...
Could you imagine what the reaction would be like if you go and read that on a Friday night house show in Florida in front of 250 people, Samoa Joe tears his ACL? I mean, a lot of that, it's out of your control, of course. But to me, it would just really hammer home the point of what are these guys serving here? Is NXT such a priority that this main roster that to me is the priority very much in need of top guys. You've split these rosters in half, and I mean, numbers are what they are at this moment. And these two, to me, NXT should not be the be-all, end-all that we've got to stack the deck with all of these names. I think that's a company that you can tour with a fraction of those names. It's half developmental, and it's half names that you recognize that can work with the younger guys. But the time down there, to me, it's a six-month revolving door.
It serves a purpose, but now it's become something bigger and grander. But at the same time, you have one true master serve, and that's the main roster with a major network deals in play, and you want to pump up those big arenas and sell as much merch to as many people with as much exposure as you can. And I think Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura can fill that role for Raw and SmackDown or whatever. No matter what, you're going to enter a rebuilding period with NXT. It's inevitable, and so bite the bullet. Send these guys up. You can always bring in a player slash coach, and there's plenty of them there. But at the same time, it's you're going through a rebuilding era. The thing I've noticed since the untimely passing of Dusty Rhodes last year is that the ability to package these young guys from NXT, to give them a polish, to give them a true identity, isn't quite there. The philosophy's changed, and it's going to happen. You don't have a Dusty. He really didn't replace Dusty. You have Shawn Michaels as the head trainer. That's more of a mechanic helping polish guys in the ring with the spots, the maneuvers, the finer nuances of the performance. But the personality-driven aspect has not been covered. The packaging of the talent has not been addressed since Dusty passed away last June. So that's something they still need to desperately resolve. They need to figure out what's going on there. A guy like Paul Heyman's readily available, incredibly talented, could really help. I'm not saying make him the booker. He'd be a great booker for them, great head writer, whatever you want to call it now. But they need someone to sit in there and start to find identities for these guys. I don't think there's a lot of faith in some of these guys. And yes,
clearly you haven't watched Patrick Clark.
Well, you know, there's definitely always going to be lulls in every company. There's highs and lows, but I'm not seeing those distinct characters and haven't for a while from NXT. And I think it's great that they're bringing guys like Roderick Strong. He debuted at NXT this week. He's got great ability to really be a guy that can be a face of the NXT if you're going to move Joe or Nakamura up to the main roster. But I think it's time that NXT bite the bullet and start doing something like that. And they also got to address, like I said, they need someone that can really mold these guys and their personas.
I also feel that when the brand split happened and you heard about all these offers going out to older talent out there to come back, and we've seen some of them pop up, to me, someone like a Mickey James coming down, I think it would really benefit NXT if they could get her to come in for 3 to 4 months. She does this match with Asuka, and then she comes in. It's not a super taxing schedule where she can work with a lot of these younger women. And instead of focusing on older talent for the main roster, designate those guys to just come down for a quick 3 to 4 month stay in NXT, work with the younger talent, and reserve those main roster spots for the talent that is graduating from NXT. To me, that would really speed up the development of a lot of these talents if they're going out there and they're working with other experienced talent and not using the Shinsuke Nakamuras and Kentas for those roles, because they're better served elsewhere at this point.
They are. They are. And I like the idea of having that rotation. And as time goes on, you're going to have less and less of these guys with great experience that are able to do that. I think Mickey James was a great and surprising get, but it makes sense and it works. And there's a lot of other guys out there that they can have contribute. And the same thing goes for the creative process. You can cycle in guys that maybe will work with, and especially since you're in Florida, so many legends are down there. You could cycle in a Heyman or someone like a Kevin Sullivan as an example for 3 or 4 months, have them work with the guys, give them gimmicks, personas, and then have someone else help and make adjustments and then expose them to that level of the business. But again, WWE Performance Center still blows away anything like I mean, in terms of being an incubator for talent, there's nothing that's ever been like it in pro wrestling, and they're going to be fine, but they're pouring in a ton of money. There's some adjustments, like we're talking about, they need to make, but it's still amazing, an amazing facility. That's imagine WWE didn't have it. How screwed would they be?
Oh, it's amazing to look at where they were 10 years ago with developmental compared to today. It very much is night and day. And this week, Tommy End, Mary Dobson, Big Damo, all reporting to the Performance Center, as did Stephanie.
Yeah,
who I guess has sent herself back to developmental.
Yeah, I think she was just visiting to say hi. Stephanie visiting WWE Performance Center. There's some great talent there. Tommy End, fantastic. Not too familiar with Dobson, but Damo's, he's the real deal, and he's just what WWE needs. He's just so different looking, kick-ass dude. I think he's going to be a great get. They all are, really. And another interesting mix, two guys actually very interesting in the mix right now are from Mexico, CMLL's Rush and La Máscara, who are both very good friends with La Sombra, interestingly enough. And La Sombra has been a little homesick. They've changed his name.
Have you seen his new character on TV yet since he's turned?
Not really. I just haven't had a chance.
It's an improvement.
How much of an improvement?
I don't think it's that bad. I think this week he had interviewer Andrea DeMarco as his translator.
That's good.
And I mean, for the first time in his NXT run, he showed personality. So I mean, this is
confidence. He needs confidence.
Way better than the babyface run, which is, I mean, a disaster.
It didn't click, and you could see the confidence from week to week when I was watching, and it was eroding rapidly. But if Rush and La Máscara were to come in, and some people call Rush Rush, I've been told by Mexican luchadors, Rush is fine. So I'm going to call him Rush. But if Rush and La Máscara,
like the Canadian band,
were to come in, that would definitely be a boost for Sombra, because you know he'd have more familiarity with people there. Yeah, but it's a great question mark. If you're Rush, if you're Máscara, do you want to leave what you have in Arena Mexico with CMLL for these pastures? Are they truly greener? If you look at Sombra's run or even Místico's run, you'd have to be pretty uneasy. It's a foreign country, no guarantees. You're giving up a plush job and the life as you know it for the unknown. And those that have accepted that adventure, I don't know if it's worked out so great. I mean, I can't think of too many guys have come up in the modern era that have really clicked. And that's not their fault necessarily. It's not the office's fault. Just they haven't clicked. Look at Sin Cara / Místico. Just the training issues or the injury issues, I should say. But will Rush and La Máscara end up in WWE? I guess we'll see. But that'd be a huge get for WWE. Very talented guys.
Now, this past week, Paige had her neck surgery. It was a very busy week for Paige. Not only getting engaged to Alberto Del Rio, Alberto El Patron, Alberto El Presidente.
Alberto, future husband. I don't know how to say that in Spanish, sorry.
Yes. So she had her neck surgery. Said it went well. The hernia was bigger than expected and my neck was straightened. Now this girl has three screws in her neck. Pictures to come. And then, listen to this from Thursday. Tampa Airport. I just had neck surgery. I can't raise my hands about my head for screening. Don't cuss me out. I will still kick your ass.
Was this directed at anyone in particular or just you?
She said Tampa Airport. Oh.
So is this directed at them?
This is the best reality show that is not being filmed. The Paige and Alberto Del Rio Chronicles.
It would be, I think it's, I mean, it's pretty well documented on Twitter. I understand that Natalia visited her in the hospital, and Nikki also shouted her out on Twitter. But neck surgery, I wouldn't be flying right after that. But that's just me. Maybe I'm a pussy. Maybe it's just what you do after neck surgery the next day is fly out. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But I guess she's going to be on the shelf for till the spring, I'd imagine. Sometimes it's up to a year. So, you know, Paige and her return to the ring is the WWE ring. I guess we'll see. Typically, WWE's not going to, you know, if they had an issue with someone or the town had an issue with him, they're not going to come to some sort of resolution to move on until that person's healed from the injury, just for many reasons, some of them PR, some of them otherwise. But so her status is probably going to stay as is for the foreseeable future. I'm not speaking as an expert on this, just, you know, I guess I am, but I don't have intel from her or WWE that that's what they're doing, but just based on history, I would imagine that's where they go with it. Maybe there'll be a wedding. Maybe there'll be a wedding in this time. Who knows?
Oh, man. E's going to be furious.
Yeah. I'm trying to get MSL to be the ring bearer. We'll see what happens.
Oh, boy. What could go wrong?
Make it a podcast, of course.
Since we were not here last week, I did want to just bring up this this topic about this network survey that the WWE put out, and not going through all the different tiers, but the fourth tier that they're talking about, this $14.99 option, and these are all kind of theoretical questions being thrown out. They haven't committed to anything here change-wise. But the idea of having outside companies available on the network, we certainly have spoken about this quite a lot, and reflecting the Fight Pass presentation. But the WWE Network, it's been very much inclusive of their own content and what they own. And this is the first sign of them looking outside, whether it be outright trying to buy content outside and then just bring it in, or lease content, which would be interesting. Do you see this as viable and realistic on the WWE's part to go out there? I mean, they specifically listed TNA and Ring of Honor in the survey. Logistically and contractually, that might be easier said than done.
Yeah, it depends on how they go about doing this, if they do it at all. And there's another company out there looking to get the exclusive streaming rights to independent companies now too. WWE,
yes,
will surely, if they want, they can outbid anyone if they want. It's part of their strategy and what makes sense. The other company is Flow Sports, I think is the name.
Yes.
And so I know some companies are in the process of negotiating an agreement with Flow. I don't know where that will end up. And I really don't know what the viability of streaming this, if you're not WWE, is. I mean, what can you really do in terms of business? And streaming is such a – unless you have that stable platform, the infrastructure for that and everything, it's so hard to be foolproof. And if you're WWE, I think it works better. For some of these indie companies, you know, I guess it depends on the money and the terms and the rights involved. I mean, there's a lot of weirdness here. But for WWE, it makes a lot of sense to get the footage from the guys on the ground level if they have the rights of footage for a period of time or in perpetuity. I'm curious to see how many fans would really want this stuff. I think PWG would be an interesting one.
I think PWG is just they have their model and it works for them.
They're being pursued, from what I was told, by one of those companies. Not going to say which one.
The question will be how many zeros it will take for PWG to say, you know what, it's been fun doing this, but this is outrageous money.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, They are the only company I think I buy DVDs from in this day and age. I just got the Battle of Los Angeles yesterday, so that's my weekend viewing, Court.
Yeah.
You're welcome to come over.
All right, I'll hop on the plane and be there by tonight. Maybe go to that place. What was it called? Swanky Frank's. What's the place where we went with Damien?
Swanky Frank's.
That might be in Stanford. I'm sorry.
Sneaky D's?
Yes. He's not that far off.
Swanky Frank's.
Sneaky D's.
That's the one where – was it you that got – yeah, you got sick.
Yes, yes. I still blame Way for that, but that's a
– I've never got sick at Sneaky D's. It's a monument here in Toronto. It should be a – what's it called? A historical venue.
That sounds classy. Speaking of,
there's nothing classy about Sneaky D's.
No, no. Other than the honor you just bestowed upon it. But NXT is coming to Toronto, and
dude, everything is coming to Toronto.
Jim Ross, insane. Everything's converging within the next month. Are you gonna be ready for this?
No, I am not. I am just gonna give up on this weekend, because in addition to all the wrestling insanity, there are two UFCs and a Bellator on that Saturday, which I do have to see at some point on that weekend, and I don't know when that is exactly going to happen. But I actually just got this on Thursday night. Chris Jericho is doing his Talk is Jericho show on the Sunday morning, and I don't believe his show overlaps with Jim Ross's. So if you are really in the mood to hear a lot of Q&As and attend all of these, you could go to Chris Jericho's show with AJ Styles Sunday morning at 10 a.m., and then it's a quick walk to Second City to catch Jim Ross. And there is also an NXT after party, I understand, on Saturday night at the Real Sports Bar right next to the Air Canada Center with Christian and The Miz. This is going to be a wild weekend, Court, and you're going to miss it.
Well, I'm sure you'll be taking in as much as you can. How much of that do you plan to experience?
Well, I'm hosting the Jim Ross show, so I expect to experience that. I will not be going to Survivor Series. I may be going to TakeOver. I don't know. There's a lot of... I don't know how I'm planning. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, you're I mean, I think you should do a live remote from the parking lot. You know, the old school style like that you're doing.
Do you know how cold it's going to be in 4 weeks' time?
Listen, here in Canada? I'm not moving to Canada, but you don't want to, you know, for all my fellow Americans looking at Canada, you're just selling how nice it is. Don't freak them out.
You know, I'll sound like a total snob here, but it was really something over WrestleMania weekend where, I mean, this was the first year I didn't go to WrestleMania in like 4 years. And I got to cover so much more just being at home, and it was largely enjoyable, save for a stream here and there. But it was like I could do so much more just being at home, and I kind of like just watching events. It's the same with MMA. Whenever I'm at a card, I'm just watching it in the back. I don't find watching it live really does much more for me. In fact, it's more difficult to kind of cover.
Has your road to WrestleMania 33 in Orlando been officially derailed?
No, it has not. It's still a 50-50. I would like to get to Orlando. It is possible.
House of Mouse.
We shall see.
We'll see. Well, the Toronto card's a good one. When you look at the NXT show, you got Samoa Joe with Nakamura there for the NXT title. Mickie James challenging for the women's title. That's going to be a big one.
Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger. That crowd's going to be super hot for those 10. Two.
And then you got the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, if you will. So that's right now what the card is. As we get closer, we'll probably have more. But, it's an interesting time when you look at Toronto. You guys are the hotbed for wrestling. You got Goldberg and Brock. It's going down. So,
what do you think the reaction is going to be like to Goldberg in Toronto?
I think they're going to like him. I people have been saying,
I do too.
Oh, you know, he took out Bret Hart. Dude, come on. It was an accident. It was you know what, though? You got 4 weeks. Things can cool off very quickly depending on how WWE goes with stuff creatively. Market to market, crowds can be hot, can be cold. But I think they're going to be big into that match. Now, once the bell rings, all bets are off for how the crowd reacts to that match. You know, going in, he comes out, the music, they're going to pop. When that bell rings, all bets are off. You never know.
Promotionally, I am not in favor of this. But from the standpoint that this guy has not had a match since 2004, he's 49. Would you push for Goldberg to do a match before Survivor Series? And I don't even know. I mean, you would essentially have to do it on TV. And I wouldn't want him to have a long match, which would kind of be the point of doing a match, just to get some. I mean, he can do all the training he wants and all the practices he wants. It is very different when you're actually in there doing a match. I could see them hotshotting something on that Halloween night with Goldberg.
I prefer not only he not wrestle until Survivor Series, but they don't get heat. They keep them separate. I don't want to see them touch.
Well, of course, from a promotional
standpoint. Say of course, because you know this shit can go about 10 different ways.
I'm like, in a perfect world, yes. He should not – the match should be Survivor Series, but he also has to go out there at Survivor Series and not just do a two-minute match. And – Do you want to at least have this guy go out there and at least have a match for the first time in 14 years and see how his cardio is and how he's going to hold up here? I mean, that's a hard 12, 13-minute match with Brock Lesnar.
I would put him on select house shows if you want to and check that out if you want to go down that road. I wouldn't.
Maybe he'll go down to the Performance Center and have the greatest practice match with Shawn Michaels that no one will see, that they'll put on a future DVD release.
I like the idea of NX or WWE Performance Center doing smokers. Just these matches no one sees. That's, we just start having like WrestleMania matches that are smokers.
And that could be content. Yeah. Just flying guys do like Ricky Morton, Shawn Michaels, 10 minutes at the Performance Center.
Flair, Shawn Michaels again. You know, just hell, book Brock Lesnar, have him go down there. Shawn versus Brock. It's endless. You could bring down Cornette and do Heyman versus Cornette. That's endless. But you know, we'll see what happens with Goldberg. I think. Don't have them touch. Don't do any of that stuff. And I wouldn't do a long match. 12 minutes.
I do not like this idea of him coming on that Halloween night show. I don't know what you could possibly do to top this past Monday. I thought that segment was amazing. I understand doing the face-to-face with Brock on the go-home show. But what more can you do, save for a match, on the 31st?
Yeah, but it's Halloween. I don't know how.
What's he going to come out? Do another promo? What was that accomplished? There's no Brock there that night.
I get very worried about Goldberg on Halloween being.
Oh, geez.
Someone
don't
putting
even
in like
it.
A Hillary Clinton wig on him or something like, you know, Goldust.
It's going to be him in a wig with Paul Heyman dressed as Dracula.
I think Paul E could do a really compelling Alfred Hitchcock, actually. But that's a story for another time. Before we shut the show down. World of Sport is returning later this year for a 2-hour special on ITV hosted by...
You want to go?
I'm down, man. Let's do it. It's going down on November 1st in Manchester. It's going to be hosted by the legendary American announcer, Jumpin' Jim Ross. It's cool to see World of Sport returning. People have been watching all their videos and for forever on YouTube. And it seems like this is kind of like the natural progression of all of the enthusiasm for British wrestling over the last few years, culminating in maybe a one night only, but one night only sometimes turns into something else. But World of Sport returning on ITV this year. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if ever there was a time to push forward wrestling on ITV, now's the time. I mean, that part of the world is just
ready for it.
So hot with talent.
They're ready for it.
There's so much, and now they've got the attention of so many people worldwide. It would be great if they could get television there and also be able to get it into other countries as well. I think that you have so many great promotions there, and it's just getting attention on your products. And going back to our network discussion, I mean, that's why I would love the idea of one outlet being able to get all these different companies under one umbrella. I'm not down with just having to subscribe to 20 different streaming services. I think for convenience-wise, I think the future is one or two big ones, and you get your progresses and your Rev Pros and everything, and you pay your $20 a month.
Well, it's like anything. These are tech companies, and what could happen, I'm not saying it will happen, is smaller tech companies get gobbled up by the bigger ones, and that may happen with this one day or not. But everyone's in a race to accumulate content and exclusivity on that content. And it's great for release right now. You look at the British wrestling scene. They to have your own product that appeals to the local level is something that I think is going to be very interesting for ITV and anyone else that's looking to make a play on a non-WWE product. And with the TNA's, I think TNA's deal is coming up soon with, was it Challenge TV?
Challenge.
So if that's the case, that's an interesting opportunity because when TNA would go through the market, they would do huge business always out there. So that maybe is an opportunity to take a company like RevPro, like Progress, et cetera, and go and to the next level. We'll see what happens there. But it's cool to see Jim Ross involved as an announcer going back and hosting this. So across the other end of the world, we also wonder where in the world is Matt Sydal after what came out in Nikon Sports this earlier this week. A lot of speculation had been brewing about what had happened and the tweets about him in Hawaii due to passport issues, now obviously a cover-up. But tragically, because of some bad decision-making, and people are going to say, hey, she should be allowed to do this. You know, it's a harmless drug. The bottom line is the rules in Japan are the rules in Japan, and you have to abide by the rules of Japan or you're shit out of luck and you're going to get into a problem like this. You just got to respect the rules, know the rules. And it's happened to celebrities that have entered Japan. It's happened to other wrestlers that have entered Japan. And in those times, promoters would help facilitate a solution with money sometimes, that these issues would go away. That didn't happen with Matt Sydal. So it looks like he's going to lose his future New Japan bookings because he can't enter the country. And I'm sure New Japan's probably not too enamored with this, but they've replaced him with Finlay, and Ricochet and Finlay is an interesting combo.
Yeah, David Finlay, I'm very high on David Finlay. It's very unfortunate with Matt Sydal, a super talented guy who now has, you know, theoretically lost the ability to make a living in Japan, which there were options for him. I mean, whether it was in Dragon Gate and more recently New Japan, that's a sizable hit to your possible outlets to make money in. But as you said, Court, everybody knows what the rules are, and it's similar when there's a drug test in MMA, specifically for pot, and you'll hear all the outrage. And my stance has always been the time to argue that is before you break the rule, not afterwards. We know what the rules are in place, and to just ignore it, that's not going to get you out of the issue. And in Japan, it's the worst place possible to be carrying marijuana, as Sydal has learned.
Yeah, so, you know, what's his future? Who's to say? And also another person I'm wondering about their future is Georges St-Pierre. Terminates his UFC agreement. What the hell's going on?
Well, Court, you have dealt with many contracts in your day. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, I'm no longer under contract to my promotion. But it's an interesting case.
Well, there are. You can opt out. You do have provisions where you can opt out. Every contract's different. They're totally different. So I can't speak, you know, about GSP's contract, but I don't know why.
Well,
how he can terminate it.
Well, Georges St-Pierre's last contract he signed was in 2011. So that predated the Reebok provisions in the new contracts. And he makes a ton of money in endorsement deals. So if he truly wants to fight this, which the UFC came out with a statement disagreeing with Georges St-Pierre's classification as a free agent, it's an interesting discussion if you go in front of a judge stating, A, this is the contract I signed, and I'm no longer allowed outside endorsements, and I'm labeled as an independent contractor that is now being told I have to wear this exclusive apparel company while giving up money that my signed contract allows me. I don't know how a judge interprets that. I don't know if George necessarily is going to go to those lengths, or if this is simply the latest tactic in this negotiating term with himself in the UFC, because Georges St-Pierre becoming a free agent, it doesn't mean he's going to be able to make this money in Bellator. It's probably a pipe dream that he can earn the same level of money outside of the UFC. I would say it's near impossible. I think that if he wants to fight, it probably should be in the UFC, and he probably knows that.
Well, it's a new era for the UFC. A lot of things are changing, and they're looking to pump up their profitability and shave back all spending. And
massive cuts this week.
Massive cuts, heartbreaking cuts.
Yeah, this was at the highest level of their executive ranks. I mean, Gary Cook, he was out this week. Marshall Zelaznik, who's been with that company for a decade. Tom Wright, who oversaw the Canadian office as well as Australia and New Zealand. We know Dave Schaller, he had taken a job last week with the Philadelphia 76ers. He's finishing up soon. Joe Silva will be leaving the company by the end of the year. I mean, this is going to be a drastically different UFC come 2017.
Yeah, and this,
we mentioned culture changes. That, to me, is the epitome of it in the UFC at the moment.
And behind it all, this was a leverage buyout. Essentially, they borrowed money to buy UFC. So now the rush is on them to drive up profitability and cut to the bone on operations. This is done every day in these kind of deals. So you're going to see a lot more heartbreak and a lot more cutting back. And hopefully the UFC can operate at a level that allows them to continue to grow. That's what their intent is, to, you know, drive up profitability, but keep this thing as lean as possible. And then, you know, the exit strategy for a William Morris Endeavor, Ari Emanuel, is sometimes to go public, sometimes to sell to another party. But those are kind of the exit strategies you look at when you have something like this, and there's others. But Georges St-Pierre can generate a shit ton of money, especially up in your neck of the woods, but anywhere really. And to have him come back into the family only is to their advantage. Will it happen? Time is clicking on both UFC and for I shouldn't say time is clicking. Time is ticking on UFC and for George St. Pierre because, you know, the older you get, the harder it is to come back and be effective, but also the longer you're away from the fans. And I'm not saying they're going to forget a George St. Pierre. He's really a once-in-a-lifetime type fighter. But everything's going against you. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully they can bring him back. If they were to somehow resolve this, what's the fight you would put him in?
George St. Pierre? I mean, I think the comeback of George St. Pierre, I don't want to say the opponent is – it doesn't matter. You certainly want someone – you know, Robbie Lawler was a name floated out, and he has since stated that he would be willing to fight. That would be a very interesting fight for George coming back. It would be a very difficult fight for George coming back. I think there's a lot of interest in that. I think you could have gone with a Nick Diaz. I think that's a fight Diaz would have wanted, and I know some people would not – necessarily be crazy about that rematch, but I think that would be a really big fight this many years later. You're talking 3.5 years since they last fought. Those would be options to me that I would be looking at, and I think it would be a massive success. But you're coming at a time when they are cutting costs and fighters are demanding more and more, and you pay George what he wants, and suddenly that raises the ceiling of so many other of your top draws that believe that they bring even more to the table than George does. And that it comes at a very difficult time when you're trying to drastically cut costs and meet these earnings that you have promised with all this debt that the new company has taken on.
Yeah, it's and how much does a company like this appreciate George St. Pierre? You know, Dana White, of course, is going to give them the perspective of what this means, but they've trimmed out a lot, and they're moving a lot of their operations, their business, a lot of key roles to Beverly Hills, Los Angeles. And with William Morris Endeavor handling a lot of these aspects, the appreciation for what a certain fighter means might be lost on some.
And don't forget, George St. Pierre is repped by CAA.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well. What an interesting storyline.
Good
this
for
is.
George St. Pierre, because there's a lot of conflict of interest, and everyone can say, "Oh, we're in different departments and stuff. It's fine. Don't worry about it." Yeah, that's not going to work out so well for most.
All right. Well, that is going to wind things down on a riveting edition of Bauer and Pollock, brought to you by Google Docs.
Well, actually, I did add one last thing to our Google Docs. I think it's important we touch on before we head out.
Yes.
Jordan Parsons, Axel Rotten, and Balls Mahoney diagnosed with CTE. Former Bellator fighter Jordan Parsons, and of course, everyone's familiar probably with Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney, both recently, all three recently passed away. And they released information that that Parsons is the first MMA fighter to be diagnosed with CTE.
Yes, and the fact he was so young, that's definitely concerning.
24, 25, and I think.
25 years old, yeah, when he and died just tragically earlier this year in a hit-and-run accident, and trained with the Black Zillions out of Florida. And, I mean, that's a gym that houses the likes of Anthony Johnson, Rashad Evans, tons of guys. So the fact that this was such a young fighter, I'm sure that would concern any fighter. Yeah. The fact that this is one of those things where I'm sure deep down you realize is possible in your future, but seeing actual evidence of it in such a young fighter who hadn't had a ton of professional fights, you can't help but be concerned for other fighters who have done so much more, not just fight-wise, but sparring and how hard they have gone in training. And, I mean, this is probably going to be a story that does not let up for an entire generation to come as more and more brains are being examined.
Yeah, and Dr. Julia Koffler at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center also diagnosed Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney along with in conjunction with Dr. Bennett Omalu, who many are familiar with, very high-profile guy who was the subject of the movie Concussion. He also confirmed the same results. So This is going to be interesting as there's a class action lawsuit against WWE regarding concussions with Konstantin Kairos, I would assume a Greek gentleman, representing this class action lawsuit against WWE. So where this ends, I don't know, but you know, it's a reminder of, you know, full contact sport as MMA, as football, even pro wrestling. It's, of course, it's all work, but when you get dropped on your head, you're getting dropped on your head. When you take a back bump and you land the wrong way, it's impacting your brain. Every back bump can impact your brain if taken wrong. So you know, it's a troubling thing, but it's probably there's more on the way. And in the case of New York State now, they have new legislation. I think it's on the books or about to be on the books, where you have to put in, if you're a promoter for boxing, for MMA, I don't think it extends to pro wrestling. Maybe it will one day, but you have to put out a lot of money, insurance money, for each show to insure the fighters for 5 to 7 years for the purpose of CTE. So changing times, changing business issues for these companies.
The final thing, are you able to share your Donald Trump story?
I have a Donald Trump
about,
story.
About your email, or is that a private story?
Well, I mean, I was hit up by the AP if I had any Donald Trump stories, and if so, please to contact them as soon as possible. I can confirm.
I thought that was the greatest story, that they tracked you down
for
any possible damning evidence of this candidate.
Yeah, I can confirm that he did not try to grab my pussy, because I don't have one, but he never made any advances towards me, nor did I see him make any advances towards anyone. I had my experiences were pretty relatively innocuous with Mr. Trump. Sorry, but I wrote back to AP saying thanks for thinking of me, but yeah, I don't have anything. And even if I did, and I don't, it's like, man, imagine opening up Pandora's box if you did that.
Someone's listening right now.
No, I don't have a damn thing. Sorry. Right, well, I have zero.
Well, when they go low, you go high, Court.
All I want is just to kick back and have a nice meal at Swanky Frank's. I don't need any of this political shit.
Yes. It will be quite something in 6 months from now when nobody has any care in the world about who the president is.
But I will tell you, there's a good chance that the Donald will be a part of WWE 27. If I was a betting man and I don't have any knowledge, I'd say, oh, you know that $6 million that Linda spent on his campaign was a gesture. At this point in time, to drop $6 million large, that's a gesture. Say, hey, when times are tough, remember, we got your back. WrestleMania.
What if he doesn't do a concession speech on election night?
Does it on Raw.
Does it on Raw. And he just buries Hillary and the political process and the Republican Party. Scorched earth on the USA Network, no less.
I'm sure in the back of Vince's mind, he's thinking, how do I make him president of something just on TV? I'm sure Vince is thinking that. I'm sure Vince is thinking, how does he – Vince right now is thinking, if this guy doesn't win, how do I monetize this? Because that's what makes Vince Vince. You know, and that's why he has the resources and the connections to make that happen. To again, give a friendly, you know, some people say, my thoughts are with you, and they'll send a card or an email or a text. Dropping $6 million is another gesture, but of the similar vein, just, yeah, you know, the one percenter version.
Well, things to look forward to in the world of wrestling.
Not in Canada. You don't have to worry about any of this.
No, we're good. We're good. We're fine with our prime minister, Justin Trudeau. Court, what is going on in MLW land?
I just want to point out, you did once elect a Saint Laurent. So I just want to point that out.
That is true.
So you did have some...
Named a street after him, too, in Montreal.
Well, hopefully there'll be a Mr. Saint Laurent Street one day, but we'll see what happens.
Maybe he'll run one day.
I just want him to run somewhere. You just get this guy in shape. As for MLW Radio, MLWRadio.com, we have right now a new show coming out later today with Bruce Pritchard talking about his time in TNA, which is very timely given the craziness going on there. We have a new Ric Flair show out with Shane Helms. We have a new MLW Radio out. We have an MLW History in the Making with historian Matt Farmer looking at Memphis wrestling going back to the Andy Kaufman days with Jerry Lawler, the USWA days, and Mr. McMahon's dry run when he invaded along with Pat Patterson the USWA Memphis in 1992. It's a great history in the making. You don't want to miss it. And we have a ton more. Just go to MLWRadio.com. We never stop pumping out podcasts just like you guys over at The Law.
Yes, and up at liveaudiowrestling.com, we have many new shows up, including a review of Raw and SmackDown and NXT from this past week. And Sunday night on The Law, midnight Eastern time, we are going to be joined by Eric Bischoff, a man that Court Bauer got to know this past week, as well as Dave Meltzer. We'll be chatting all of the news, the latest on TNA, and Bill Goldberg, and whatever else happens between now and Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And you can, of course, subscribe to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes, youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling. Court is at Court Bauer. If you are looking for any Donald Trump footage, he can be contacted there. And I am at...
Stop it.
I am John Pollock.